This is the Best of Game Time podcast. Highlights of today's 1620 The Zone's Game Time in bite-sized pieces. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading the Best of Podcast. On today's episode, give my reaction to the leave of absence that Keyshawn Johnson Jr. is taking to head home and quote-unquote mature. My take on that, plus tons to react to with the NBA trades and trade rumors in full effect as we are getting close to the NBA draft, and a great conversation with Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com. Enjoy the podcast. Like most of you, trying to make sense of this Keyshawn Johnson Jr. situation is fairly perplexing, you know? And maybe it's one of those stories that there isn't necessarily more to it. You know what I mean? Sometimes, like, you can outthink yourself and try to, what does this really mean? But Keyshawn Johnson Jr., who was the centerpiece of the Calabrasca movement a year ago, the catalyst to seemingly a ton on the recruiting trail, has taken a leave of absence from the Nebraska football team and will reportedly return in January of 2018. He's had a rocky start here to his tenure at Nebraska. Remember, he enrolled early at Nebraska. He arrived for the spring semester so he could participate in spring ball. And remember, he got sick. Was he the one that had the appendix? I want to say he had the appendix out. Either way, he got sick during spring ball, which set him back. He couldn't fully participate in practices. Remember then in the spring game, he caught a pass and fumbled. And then a little over, gosh, what was it, like 10 days ago or so, he gets busted for marijuana in his dorm room. And so here we are a week or so later, and there is reportedly a joint decision between Riley, the staff, the athletic department, and Keyshawn Johnson Jr.'s dad, Keyshawn Sr., for Keyshawn Johnson Jr. to leave the program for a while in hopes of maturing before he ultimately returns to Lincoln. And that's kind of where we're at. That's kind of hard to totally make sense of in some ways. Really good write-up in the Omaha World Herald. Urge everybody to go check it out. Kind of sets the story up perfectly and got some quotes. Couple quotes from Keyshawn Johnson Sr., his junior's dad, obviously. Said his son wants to mature. He said, quote, "You're in college now. You're an adult. You're not a kid. You take a look at it from afar and let me know how important it is to you." Went on to say, this is a pretty strong quote here from, I thought this was interesting. He said, Johnson Sr. said he's, quote, "in full support of Riley, receivers coach Keith Williams, and the rest of Nebraska's staff. He wants to see maturity from his son." So I'm trying to figure out what the impetus behind this, but here's his quote. He says, quote, "One thing you will not do as my son is you will not embarrass Nebraska. You will not embarrass Mike Riley, and you will not embarrass this family. If you mature and you're ready to resume your football career and academic goals, then Nebraska will be ready to embrace you." And then this also was interesting. He was asked, Keyshawn Johnson Sr. was asked about his son's opinion of the leave of absence. He said, quote, "I never asked him. At the end of the day, I don't think that decision was in his hands. He squandered that decision. He still wants to play football, and he still wants to play for Nebraska. But if you don't do the things you're supposed to do under the guidelines of me, it's not going to happen." And then last two quotes here. This one, there's a lot in here. He said, quote, "You've watched on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, everything's a big party. You just want to get to college to party, but you don't understand you're playing college football. It's a business. It's a serious business. If you want to become successful, make it to the NFL, you got to embrace it. You got to own it. You don't make it to the next level by cruising. There's no cruise control. There's no Mike Riley is good friends with Keyshawn, so his son's automatically going to play. That's not the game. That's not why he went to Nebraska. He went there to work his tail off, to have an opportunity to be successful. But when you don't do that and you squander that, what are you going to do?" There's a lot of kind of juicy quotes there from Keyshawn Johnson Sr. And again, all those are in Sam McEwen's story. Urge everybody to go check that out. Get you totally up to speed with all that. So Okay, I mean, there are certainly some schools of thought behind some of those quotes I think we can all get behind. You know what I mean? But there also are some things that kind of make you scratch your head a little bit. And I guess the big broad thing is, okay, does one pot bust seriously result in leaving the team? One pot bust and it derails a scholarship? One pot bust and he needs to go home and mature? Some of that stuff seems a little bit overboard. And you wonder, whose decision was this? Was this Keyshawn Johnson, his dad, stepping in and saying, I'm taking my son home, I'm gonna get him straight? Was this the coaching staff saying, hey, Keyshawn, you need to come get your boy. We can't have him here for a while. Like, I'm curious where everything began. Because some of this points to that it feels like this is one of those stories, and again, this is what I said at the outset, I don't know if this is true or not. To me, it feels like there may be more to the story than we completely know about. And I hate to speculate, but this does seem fairly unprecedented in a lot of ways. Because it's interesting to read between the lines of the quotes from Keyshawn Sr. His references to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and how everything's a big party. What, maybe Keyshawn Johnson Jr. was partying in excess. I don't know. I don't follow his social media accounts, so I don't know exactly what Keyshawn Johnson Sr. is kind of referring to here. But whatever's going on must be extreme enough for this action to be what's happening here. Where the coaching staff, the athletic department, everybody's saying, yep, he needs to go home and get his you-know-what together for 6 months. And again, whether that's coming from Riley, Keith Williams, Sean Eichhorst, or Keyshawn Johnson Sr., this is pretty substantial. And maybe this is, and I got more thoughts on this later, but maybe this is a cautionary tale of enrolling early. Maybe Keyshawn Johnson Jr. wasn't mentally or emotionally ready to be in college just yet. Maybe his maturity level wasn't there. We all remember, really try and go back. We all remember when you first get to college, it's pretty crazy to all of a sudden be 100% on your own and to be 100% in charge with what you do with your free time. Like, That's at least if it was for me, kind of shocked my system. It was like, I remember when I got to Lawrence, Kansas, it was like, okay, like, I can literally do kind of whatever I want to do right now. That freedom, some people can't handle it. Some can. Some people can handle that level of freedom. And some can't. And at that age, I will say this, you can mature a lot from December of your senior year to June or July or August of your freshman year of college. Like, you can take a lot of steps there. And maybe Keyshawn Johnson Jr. needed that time. And now he's trying to make up for it by going home. And Keyshawn Johnson Sr. is hoping that taking away football from him will maybe jolt some, I don't know, I hate to say reality, that's not the right, just jolt him back into the right frame of mind with all this stuff. Who knows? All I know is when this story broke yesterday, this whole situation's pretty perplexing to me and pretty odd to me. And it's going to be extremely interesting to hear what Mike Riley has to say specifically about this situation. Because all we've gotten from the media is a text message confirming that, yes, Keyshawn Johnson's going home. And then it's going to be interesting to see what ultimately the future holds for Keyshawn Johnson Jr. Will he return to Lincoln? We'll see. All I know is this situation kind of unprecedented in a lot of different ways. kind of a story that I'm still having an interesting time mentally trying to get my head completely around. 402-951-1620. Let's grab a phone call before we go to break. What's up, D? Appreciate you calling.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
You got it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how much do we learn from the Gregory situation?
Yeah, with obviously he struggled mightily with marijuana and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, specifically even as a freshman, I mean, we've all been a freshman before. I think that's one of the best decisions one of my parents did is when I started screwing up, they said, okay, that's enough. You go see Uncle Sam, and kind of the best decision of my life.
Mm, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Plus, yeah. So anyway, that's just my comment.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call, D. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, and again, you don't want to, I mean, it's like at this point, we don't know if there's if weed is a serious issue with him, if this was just, we don't know. All I know is he arrived early, he got sick, he wasn't healthy, he didn't participate fully in spring ball, he gets popped for weed in his dorm, and now he's being sent home for a leave of absence to mature. Trying to connect those dots and come to some sort of conclusion is hard. Without, of course, a lot of speculation, which is always a little bit uncomfortable to do, especially when you're talking about an 18-year-old kid. The most dangerous thing you can give a kid is free time and no supervision. Like, that's dangerous. You give a 16, 17, 18-year-old a whole bunch of free time and zero adults watching over them, that's a recipe for issues. That's why, for me, sports has always been a huge thing for me personally. Because it provided me with something to occupy my time. It provided me with something to do. It provided me with someone to hold me accountable. It provided me something to kind of strive for. People always ask me about my daughter and say, like, oh, you're going to have her play basketball? What about volleyball? What about soccer? I say, I don't know, but she's going to do something. You got to do something. I don't care if it's basketball, music, acting. Like, you got to do something. Because that's going to occupy your time, occupy your mind. And give you some structure, something to strive for, a goal, like, which is huge. And then the supervision aspect, it's tough. Because we all know, think back to high school, like at least for me, I know, we all know those kids in high school that had no supervision and didn't participate in any extracurricular activities, and they would almost always inevitably get into trouble. And I used to remember, like, I remember in my immature state, almost looking down on them, like, what are they doing? But now I think, now I look back and I think, man, when I was 16 or 17, if I didn't play sports, I didn't do anything, and I didn't have any supervision, I would have probably gotten into trouble too. And that's what happens sometimes to kids. And I'm sure anyone who's gone to college has seen this kind of cautionary tale. You know, some kid gets to college, they can't handle all the freedom and zero supervision. They can't handle it. It's too much for them. And they inevitably just make all the wrong decisions. They get into trouble. And it's not good. I'm going to tell you right now. If I would have just went to Kansas as a student and didn't play basketball, I'd have had a hard time being motivated to get up and go to my 8:30 class and take care of my schoolwork. Basketball and Bill Self motivated that. And I would have had I probably would end up drinking and partying a little too much. Again, basketball and Bill Self deterred that. Like I said, the most dangerous thing you can give a kid that isn't ready for it is free time, freedom, and no supervision. And I bring that up because I think about this Keyshawn Johnson Jr. situation as he's taking a leave of absence to go home to California in the hopes to mature, according to his father. And I think to myself, you know what? Maybe Keyshawn Johnson Jr. just wasn't ready for all the freedom that college affords you, all the free time that sometimes you can have, and having no supervision. Maybe he wasn't mentally, emotionally, or mature enough to handle all that. Maybe that's a part of what this is. I will say the thing that surprises me is, as I was alluding to, usually sports, for me at least, sports helps remedy all that freedom and no supervision. Like, usually sports gives you something to do, provides numerous watchful eyes, whether it's coaches, academic coordinators, strength coaches, older teammates, etc. So knowing Keyshawn Johnson Jr.'s background and how much football's in his veins, I would have thought football would have reigned supreme in his mind in terms of importance. And I would have thought all that a football program provides you with coaches, position coaches, academic coordinators, academic advisors, Mark Phillip, the strength coach, all the upperclassmen, there usually is a group of people kind of helping you stay accountable for what you're doing. And again, this is me just speculating based on the fact that Keyshawn Johnson Jr. is leaving to mature, and reading some of Keyshawn Johnson Sr.'s quotes about partying and all that stuff. Maybe Keyshawn Johnson Jr. just wasn't ready to handle all that. And maybe it's kind of a cautionary tale, as we talked about earlier, on, you know, enrolling early. I know, and I'm sure a lot of you do too, I know there were, I've known and seen plenty of people that have gone to college and they were not able to handle the freedom and the no supervision that college presents to you. And you try and sort through, you try to sort through some of the quotes and everything that's happening, and you try and figure out, was this Keyshawn Senior's idea? Was this all Junior? It's clearly it wasn't Junior's idea. Was this something that was thrown out by the coaches? And because in a lot of ways, this is embarrassing for Keyshawn Johnson Jr. We were saying, I mean, this is almost like some of these quotes from Keyshawn Senior, this is almost like the equivalent of getting, you ever gotten yelled at by your parents in public when you kind of get a little bit older and you're kind of like, man, it's embarrassing. I mean, think about, this is a quote from Keyshawn Sr. About Keyshawn Jr. One thing you will not do as my son is you will not embarrass Nebraska, will not embarrass Mike Riley, and you will not embarrass this family. If you mature and you're ready to resume your football career and academic goals, then Nebraska will be ready to embrace you. Goes on to say that, Keyshawn Sr. says, you watched on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, everything's a big party. You just want to get to college to party, but you don't understand you're playing college football. It's a business, and it's serious business. If you want to become successful, make it to the NFL. You've got to embrace it. You've got to own it. You don't make it to the next level by cruising. There's no cruise control. So, I don't know. You try and figure out, well, what exactly happened here? And you think, maybe he wasn't mentally, emotionally ready to handle the freedom that college can give you. And that's how it can go. So, we'll see what happens here. Again, as Mitch Sherman alluded to or said earlier when we talked to him, most people that leave don't come back. And if I were, this is just me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hope he comes back because I think it's important for the kind of the PR of the program. And I do believe that the name of Keyshawn Johnson Jr. can help continue to cultivate that pipeline to Nebraska. But I don't know. For me, it's just like, maybe this will be a future headline. Keyshawn Johnson Jr. decides to stay in California to go to UCLA or something like that. And it can be packaged as, Keyshawn, he's does better here in California. I'm around. It's what he needs. Like, doesn't that sound like something that you could read in a couple of months? It does to me. Because it certainly is a little odd. Just from the standpoint of, you think to yourself, you just don't typically, you don't typically see, hey, one pot bust And, you know, it's just like, shut it down, send him home. You don't usually see that. And so we don't know. I mean, and the hard part about this is a lot of it's speculation. But you try and read between the lines of some of the quotes, everything that's going on, and it's tough to kind of make sense of. Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com. Big CWS takeaway so far as has been what?
First, sorry for the phone issue.
Oh, you're fine.
Big takeaway so far, I would say, well, it's hard to ignore. It's hard not to pay attention to what Oregon State and Florida have done, going 2-0, and I think there's a good chance that they will be your winners on Friday, and we won't need a Saturday game. I know a lot of times it seems like that's the case from watching the first 4 days of doubleheaders, that these two teams stand out, and we always seem to have a Saturday game or two. The difference for me this year, and you know, maybe this trend will end tonight, maybe it will end Friday in the bracket finals, but it seems like the teams, the favorites, so to speak, the higher seeded teams, just continue to get their work done.
Right.
And I guess that's a credit to the selection committee and the way that they seeded these teams. Really unusual to have eight games and eight higher seeded teams win. So, and it's the way that Oregon State and Florida have won so far, that and the fact that, of course, they're going to have the normal pitching advantage and rest advantage when Friday's games come around against teams that are going to be out in the heat the next two nights, or one of the next two nights. I would be surprised if we're playing, really surprised if we're playing two games on Saturday, and mildly surprised if it's even one.
Totally agree. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. By the way, do your eyes tell you Oregon State is just a notch above everybody else, or do you think anyone can deal with them?
Well, the way that Florida has played so far,
yeah,
would lead me to believe that the Gators can hang with them. I mean, it's the same kind of thing with pitching and defense and timely hitting. Oregon State's had more of it, and Oregon State, to me, has been more impressive. I was more impressed with Oregon State, I would say, well, it's strange to say, after the 13-1 win.
Right.
I was impressed with them equally,
sure,
in both games.
Sure.
They showed me things. They were able to show me things in that Cal State Fullerton game that were not there for the taking against LSU, because they dominated the LSU game from start to finish. But to have that four-run deficit against Cal State Fullerton in the first game of the series and show absolutely no panic, it seemed to me that Oregon State was in control of that game from, you know, even the time when it was down. The tempo, the pace, the way it was being played favored Oregon State when it trailed 5-1, and that's really unusual for a college team to have that kind of composure.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. I want to transition, talk a little football with you. This Keyshawn Johnson Jr. Story from yesterday. You know, he's kind of got off to a rocky start. His health was an issue when he first enrolled early and didn't get to participate in spring ball fully. Had a fumble in the spring game and then gets the pot bust in his dorm room. 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, and now he's taking a leave of absence and heading back home in hopes to mature. I guess, how does this whole situation land to you? What's your, as a guy that's covered football for a long time, what do you make of this situation?
Well, you know, he's been a guy who, from the time that he started looking at Nebraska, I believe as a sophomore in college or in high school, right, when Mike, shortly after Mike Riley took over and you had the Keyshawn name and the Keyshawn connection to Mike Riley, he's been high on the radar of Nebraska fans for a long time, and has yet to begin his freshman year, so to speak. He was, of course, on campus last spring, but I think it puts him in a unique place in that there were so many eyes on him, and there were expectations and probably some pressure that went along with that when you're 16, 17, now 18 years old. So not surprised see him have some issues. Figured at some point in his career, probably expected it would be quite a ways more down the road, he was going to have some things to overcome. That's just kind of the way it goes, especially for these kids who are well known at an early age. It's unusual to find somebody who just smooth sails right along through their career after that kind of a splash beginning. You know, on this, I take Keyshawn Senior at his word within the reports that I read.
Yep.
That, you know, he's basically saying, we're going to shut this down before it gets bad. You're not going to embarrass your family or Nebraska or Mike Riley. I think that's a strong statement. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Generally, when guys leave, they don't come back.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that, and I know that he said that they have the intention to do that. And, you know, I don't I take them at their word again on that. But time at home, and you know, he's basically back on the market if you know, a team wants to come and look at him. And I don't think he's going to showcase himself in that way where he is open to all schools. But you never know. I mean, a fall away from the campus, you know, they may decide that being in California is a better place for him, or maybe he will be able to work his way back and want to continue at Nebraska. We'll see. It probably won't be known until much later in the fall.
Yeah, I would say I'm with you. I mean, again, you want to take them at their word, but I would say, I don't know, history tells us that I at this point I would probably lean towards I'd be surprised to see him come back. It's tough to stay because, again, we're speculating, but do you think that this leave of absence move here was an idea that more is from Keyshawn Johnson Sr. or more from the staff?
That's tough to speculate. If the only incident that he had was the one that was publicly known, I don't think the staff would move to take him off the team. You know, I think that there's a precedent for that. I mean, there's another case pending in a similar situation with that on the Nebraska team right now. And you don't generally see guys booted from the team for that kind of an incident.
Right.
But if there were other things that have happened that we don't know about, maybe they're internal situations, and this was a pattern, then it wouldn't surprise me if it was driven by the team. I knowing what we know, I would have to say it was probably more driven by the family. But
right.
If there are, like I said, if there are other incidents out there, then the coaches may have suggested it or may have mandated it.
By the way, I guess I'm going to keep asking you questions I don't know if anybody knows the answer to. What is his, like, so what is Keyshawn Johnson Jr.'s eligibility situation and scholarship situation right now?
That's a good question. I'm sure there is a concrete answer to that, but I don't know. I haven't looked into it. It's kind of been all baseball for me in the last 12 to 18 hours. I would, just looking at it on its face, when you sign that letter of intent, it's valid for 1 year, and then renewable every year after that. So he signed a letter of intent, although he was an early enrollee, but I believe he still signed a letter of intent in February, which is when you're first eligible to do it, would make him tied to Nebraska or unable to play anywhere else for a year, unable to be on scholarship anywhere else for a year. He could certainly enroll at another school in January and then perhaps not go on scholarship until after the spring semester. He's never played at Nebraska. His 5-year clock hasn't started. So I don't think that eligibility in that regard would be an issue, or being a transfer, perhaps because he went through spring practice, there's some kind of the 1-year sit out thing. But then even if that's the case, sitting out 1 year after the spring would make him eligible to play elsewhere in the 2018 season,
yeah,
which is the earliest he'd be anyway, since I don't think there's any case, any scenario in which he's going to be at a 4-year school this fall. So my take on it and sifting through all that is probably wouldn't be able to be on scholarship anywhere else until a year from now, but would be eligible to play somewhere else, also a year from now.
Mitch Sherman.
In September 2018.
It's Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. You know, Mitch, everyone matures at different rates, you know, like, and you can mature a lot in a 6-month span when you're 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. And some people, let's be honest, they struggle with the freedom that college affords you at times, where you get there and all of a sudden you are totally, can do whatever you want. Do you think, with that in mind, overall, enrolling early is a good thing for guys?
I've seen plenty of cases where it's not.
Yeah.
This is another one of those. But then there are also a lot of cases where it works out just fine and it benefits the player. More often than not, I would say it doesn't lead to perhaps what they're looking for, and that springboard into stardom or being a big contributor as a true freshman. I think most of the time what's going to happen to you on the field and on the practice field and in games as a true freshman is not dramatically altered by your presence at spring practice the year before, going through those 15 workouts, getting accustomed to college life. It can help.
Sure.
I would, it's hard to know. It's hypothetical. You know, you look at a guy who who did have success as a true freshman after coming early and say, would he have had that same success if he didn't come early? There's no way to answer that. But I think more often than not, it's going to work out the way it's going to work out as a freshman, whether you're there in the spring prior or not.
That's probably the best way to answer it. By the way, it's interesting in talking to people that cover college football. You know, you get some people reacting to this, to the Bob Stoops retiring on, boy, this greatly impacts Oklahoma next year. And some people are saying, I don't know if it's that big of an impact. What side do you fall on? Do you think, like, Lincoln Riley being the head man now, does that greatly impact how you see Oklahoma's season next year?
It greatly impacts how I see Oklahoma's program. It doesn't greatly impact how I see next season unfolding, because next season you have, well, a couple things. One, you have Baker Mayfield, and you know, his presence is in some ways more important than any coach. And, you know, he's working with his guy, Lincoln Riley. They're going to run the offense, and you know, whether Riley's the head coach or the offensive coordinator. So I think they'll be fine. They're not going to miss a beat necessarily offensively. And then Bob Stoops' staff, including Mike Stoops, will be around, presumably, through that 2017 season. But it greatly so I think Oklahoma is Oklahoma next year, and what would have happened under Bob Stoops isn't going to be dramatically different under Lincoln Riley. I mean, you know, they may be a one-game swing or something to that effect.
Right.
But the program moving forward and just the overall scope of it, yeah, I mean, it's monumental. You know, we'll see what happens after next season with that coaching staff. I would say, you know, Lincoln Riley has already brought in Ruffin McNeil, one of his guys, and, you know, to fill his own spot or to fill Bob Stoops' spot on the staff. And I would imagine that next year, in December and January, there's going to be some more turnover on that coaching staff. It's just kind of the way it usually goes. You don't see a lot of coaching changes this far into the off season, and when you see them happen earlier in the calendar year, well, then some assistant coaching moves generally follow. So I think you'll see some of those moves in December and January of next year. So In that regard, it'll impact the program quite a bit in 2018.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. Mitch, great stuff, man. Appreciate your time today. Thanks, brother.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Nick. Thanks.
I can't decide which of the fall, like, which is true. I feel like we are seeing way more trades and trade rumors and draft scuttlebutt than normal in the NBA right now. And I'm trying to figure out, is that a function of the finals ended a week earlier, so we have a week more to consume this stuff? Or is it the perfect storm of various stars being on the market or potentially on the market, and that is creating more movement? Or is this a function of Golden State being so good and so dominant, and the rest of the league in a total state of chaos trying to get on the Warriors level? I honestly don't know. I think the cop-out is probably a combination of the three. I do think on some level, though, some of this is a reaction to Golden State and just how dominant they are and how much we don't see an end in sight with their dominance. It's creating so many GMs and teams to sit back and say, guys, we're not close. We got to greatly improve things to get on par with Golden State. It's forcing movement right now. Because status quo feels like a death sentence in the NBA right now. And being just good isn't good enough. Being just good will get your ass swept by Golden State. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, think about it. Cleveland ran through the East. And they have the greatest player on earth in LeBron James. And even Cleveland right now is like, boy, we got to make some big changes if we want to hang with Golden State. I mean, think about it. They got Bron. They got Kyrie. They ran through the East. And they're like, boys, we better 1-800 Paul George, 1-800 June, but we need to change it. It feels like Golden State is they're disrupting things to a crazy level right now. Like the Warriors, they're the elephant in every single GM's room, and they're the elephant in every war room for the draft tomorrow. It's affecting who they trade, who they trade for, whether they want to play the long-term game or short-term game. Some people right now are either like, okay, if we're in the short-term game, we got to get way better. Or some people, I think, are thinking, okay, if we're in the long-term game, we got to totally think about 5-6 years down the road and wait for this storm of LeBron and Golden State to pass, in particular Golden State. I mean, almost everything is done with Golden State in mind right now. I really believe that. And I also think the timing of the stars being either on the market or reportedly on the market is motivating a lot of activity as well. I mean, you got Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Chris Paul, Porzingis. Then you think about what are the Celtics going to do? Are they got 75 draft picks, first round picks. What are they going to, LeBron could be on the move in a year. That's a huge factor in what some people are doing. But if you have a chance to land LeBron James, you'll like clear cap space a year from now. So there are a lot of heavy hitters out there in the news right now in terms of players and all this stuff. But the combination of that with the dominance from Golden State, and you got yourself some crazy trades and some crazy trade rumors going on. Like that's how it is. And you know what? The thing that the NBA is continually moving towards and why its popularity is growing is it's become a damn near year-round sport. I mean, I've been glued to my phone trying to stay up to speed with all the different trades, trade rumors, draft stuff. People are just eating this stuff up. It's like now with the NBA, you got the regular season, the playoffs, the draft, then free agency, where the news cycle and consumption of the NBA just continues to grow. The NFL does this better than anybody. I mean, that's a year-round sport. You got preseason, season, playoffs, Super Bowl, combine, draft, offseason acquisitions. It's all year. It doesn't stop. College football, a little bit like this too. You got the season. You got recruiting coverage that is just 24/7, 365. Then it reaches its climax in February for signing day. Then you have spring ball. Then you have fall camps. It's almost all year. That's the thing about baseball. The season ends. We recap the World Series for like, what, 2 days? Then we're done. We don't continue to talk about it. But the thing that the NBA, and really this has been true for forever, and it's still true today. The thing that the NBA does better than anyone, including the NFL, is these NBA players are just, they're a different level of superstar. All these guys are just so freaking famous. Like, all these superstars in the NBA are just so famous. Durant, Steph, LeBron, Kyrie, Paul George, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Melo. Like, these guys, they are all massive celebrities. And America is celebrity obsessed. These guys are megastars. People want to track and react to every single move they make. Just like we do with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. It's what we do with Chris Paul and Steph Curry. I mean, think about this right now. Like Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Jake Arrieta, Chris Bryant. Four of like the best young players. I mean, Mike Trout's ridiculous. I'd imagine most of the public couldn't pick those guys out of a grocery store. Like right now, if Mike Trout goes to Starbucks and gets a coffee, people aren't really going to think twice. Now imagine Steph Curry or Durant or LeBron James going to Starbucks or going to Hy-Vee. I mean, they'd get mobbed. I mean, seriously, how many people could pick Mike Trout out of a lineup? I don't know. I mean, Mike Trout at Starbucks? How many people are going to drop their lattes and go, holy crap, that's Mike Trout? But if Steph Curry's at Starbucks, the place would explode. Because we're subconsciously invested in these guys and it like we're subconsciously invested in Kevin Durant personally. Same with Steph and LeBron. And I think all that just plays into the urge and the desire to track this stuff, the trades, the rumors, the draft stuff. I know for me, and I know I'm not alone, I've just been glued to my phone with all this stuff. What's LA doing? What's Boston going to do? What's the latest with Paul George? What's Cleveland going to do? What's happening with Jimmy Butler? What? It doesn't stop. Oh, my God, Porzingis could be on the move. What is that? It's nuts.
Thank you for listening to today's Best of Game Time podcast. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.